What's up, Dawg Nation? Thank you for joining us for another episode. Michael, it is time to buckle up, my friend, because we are about to jump on the recruiting roller coaster. Whoa. It has been a very up and down last 24 hours on the recruiting trail for the Seminoles. And this is going to serve as our Friday show. So we got a couple of other topics that we're going to talk about from a national perspective, but we're really going to kind of focus heavily on recruiting today because, you know, Florida State is on a bye this week. No game on Saturday. So, you know, everybody keeps saying, man, like, and I always use this saying all the time, like, it's a stress-free Saturday, which is nice because we literally can't lose. And then, you know, you get to watch everybody else kind of sweat on Saturday. But daggone it, Michael, every time we have a bye week, we somehow find a way to lose by getting a decommitment. The last time I think we had a bye week, we had a decommit or a flip that week too. So there is no stress-free days with watching Florida State in 2024, but we did get a little bit of good news. So we're going to talk about that too. But yeah, man, just all aboard the recruiting roller coaster. But before we jump into that, my friend, how are you?
I'm doing all right. You know, we survived Hurricane Milton. And again, you know, shout out to those who are still going through the devastation of that in the Tampa area, Sarasota area. You know, just know our thoughts and prayers are with you. Survived that and thought, you know what? It's going to be a really quiet weekend, Jesse. Like, no Florida State, so no stressing. And then, of course, last night the news breaks that we lose one recruit and then we gain another.
Yeah, I know.
So, you know, we're back to zero again.
I know. It's such like a bipolar feeling. Like one minute I'm like, daggone, we were out grocery shopping whenever I got the notification that the flip happened. And I'm out here like just mad. My wife's like, yeah, but you know, you'll probably get it. I'm like, but this ain't good enough. This is not how you compete. And then an hour later you get a recruit. So it's like, man, it's frustrating and exciting all at the same time, but that's recruiting, man. That's why, right. You know, most of you guys who watch the show know that we don't really get super in depth on recruiting here because, man, like until you are literally moved into your dorm
and you like, trust it.
Right. Exactly. It's like a new employee. Like I'll learn your name when you've been here for a year because it's just, man, these kids ain't loyal these days. So it's hard to keep up with, but you know, it's a bye week and we got some news. So we want to talk about that, but man, you know, just, I will say one thing, hey, that fall weather's hitting. So I'm pretty excited about that. I was thinking about, you know, I've been on the fence about going to that Duke game. And then I looked up the weather the other night and it's supposed to be like 50 degrees at that game. And I'm like, perfect. Hey, I'm all about a hoodie game, man. Give me that. Some hoodie and jeans type of game. Cause you know, the last one I went to in Tallahassee was just a sweat fest. It was hot. So like, I love games like that. But we appreciate you guys tuning in and staying engaged with us. I know, man, this has been a really long season, not a whole lot of positive stuff to talk about. You know, I just ordered a new smoker, finally decided on one. So like I'm getting back into barbecue and you know, that's got my attention right now. So
I don't know what you're talking about, Jesse. The season has been super positive for me. I'm a four-time national champion on my college football 25. So I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm too depressed to even play the video game. I don't even want to hear it, man. I'm just like, golly, I don't even know if I could say Florida State on the video game. I still haven't played a lot, but you know, I love tailgating and I love stuff like that. So man, I'm super excited to get back out to making some barbecue. So if that's something you guys are into, you know, drop it in the comments what you guys think about that. But we're going to get into this one real quick, talking about recruiting. But before we do that, you guys know we got to start with a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is our friends over at Alumni Hall FSU. Speaking of that cold weather coming in, I just saw a notification that they got a new batch of hoodies in yesterday. That time's coming up. I mean, it's even going to get a little chilly down there in Florida. So make sure you go check those guys out. 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and go get you some new FSU gear. Make sure that if you're over there, you save some money by using code SPEAR to save 10%. That's online or in store. So thank you guys so much for supporting those that support us. Now, let's talk about some recruiting. Michael, first things first, we'll just kind of get the negativity out of the way. I mean, yeah. I get tired of being negative on the show. We want to be positive, but we'll just talk about it because that's the order I have my notes in here. And that is four-star wide receiver Daylon McCutcheon flips to Texas. Man, feels like Texas has taken about half of our recruits now. but man, I mean, this is the type of stuff that happens when you start 1-5. I mean, really, like if you look at it, and I know people are going to talk a lot about the NIL aspect of things, but you know, really, man, like Texas, yes, I wholeheartedly admit Texas has probably one of the biggest NIL budgets in the country outside of maybe Ohio State because they have money and they're willing to spend it. But Florida State has a top 15 NIL budget. I don't know that this is a pure NIL play. I mean, you have a kid who's from Texas to start with, And then Texas is, you know, they're up there, man. They're the number one team in the country. And you started 1-5. Florida State had the number one, like probably one of the best wide receiver classes in the country before you fell apart. And then once you started falling apart, the recruits went out. You know, it's like they say, you threw the baby out with the bathwater. So like once it started happening that way, everybody just kind of left. And so that's what happens, man, when you start off terrible. So you do lose a 4-star wide receiver commit. Again, that's a kid that's from Texas going to a Texas school. The unfortunate part of this now is Florida State only has one wide receiver left in its class after having one of the best wide receiver classes left in the country. And again, man, buckle up because UGA and LSU are very heavily pursuing CJ Wiley. And honestly, man, it would really be the least bit surprising if he ends up flipping away from Florida State too, because, you know, not only do you have a bad season on your hands, but you're also one of the worst offenses in college football. And so that's going to be a hard sell. Now, I know someone had commented on when I posted about this yesterday on social media about that, but I said, hey, look, man, if we had wide receivers who could actually catch, the offense probably wouldn't be so bad. So like, we need wide receivers. Playing time is available. But yeah, man, it's disappointing. And again, like CJ Wiley is you're hanging on for dear life right now. Yeah. Or you know, they got some new offers we're gonna talk about in a minute. But yeah, man, I mean, this one, I'll kick it back to you on this. A lot of people will say that, like, okay, well, this guy didn't want to be a Knoll or whatever. Nah, screw that, man. Like, you need guys, you need blue chip players. That's the only way you get better. Like, I don't like it either. Kids ain't loyal these days. Money is an aspect in these things. All that is true. I'm with you there. Like, if you don't want to be here for 1-5, you probably don't want to be here to help rebuild the program. But at the same time, you got to get talented players in the boat. Like, Georgia's not taking 3 stars with heart. You know, Ohio State's not taking 3 stars with heart. You need big time blue chip players. And so this one, and losing the other kid from South Carolina, it hurts, man. So
yeah,
it does. You got to get guys in the boat.
Yeah, you know, Jesse, here's how I look at it. You ever go to a restaurant, or somebody tells you about a restaurant, says, Jesse, you got to try this restaurant. It's a great restaurant. The food is amazing, right? And then one day you happen to be driving by and you look at it and it's a hole in the wall. Looks like people have been murdered there. Like, there are animals cooking the food for you, right? And you're like, there is no way I'm going to do that, right? And then one day, finally, somebody somewhere, or you're just desperate enough, you actually go try the food and you realize it's the greatest food you ever had, right? That restaurant right now is Florida State, okay? Like, it is terrible. It looks
bad. We got like a C grade on the health score.
Not even a C grade. It's a D grade. There's gunk hanging out of the door. There's flies.
We're about to get shut down by the health department.
Get shut down. I mean, it looks terrible. And I imagine for recruits, I mean, you remember when you were a kid, right? Even, you know, you want to go to the best thing. You want to go to the flashy thing, the thing that you think is going to get you the most success. And for Florida State right now, you know, I don't think for Daylon McCutcheon, I don't know. I'm not in the nose of this, but I don't think it had to do much. I'm going to assume it didn't have to do much with NIL. I think, as you said earlier, Florida State has a top 15 NIL budget. I think they can pay, not with the best of them like the Ohio States and the Texas, but I think they can pay in that top 15.
Yeah.
I don't think this has much to do with NIL. Now, there might be a little bit of it, but I'm assuming it doesn't. I think this has more to do with the fact that he committed to a nice restaurant and then it got shot up and it looks terrible. And now he's like, yeah, I'm going to go to that restaurant that looks really good. That's got a bunch of beef. They got Lamborghinis in the front of their parking lot. That's where I'm going to go. And it's in my backyard. Why am I going to go across the country where I don't know anybody? I don't have any family. And right now, I don't even know if those coaches are going to be my coaches when I get there. I don't know if the program is going to be successful enough. I don't know if they're going to have a quarterback that can actually complete a pass to me, right? I don't know if I'm going to regress and start dropping the balls like all of those wide receivers are too. So I think part of that is him just looking at the tea leaves and saying, you know what? I don't want to be a part of that place anymore. That place is not as appealing to me as it was when I first committed there. I mean, and then you mentioned CJ Riley right now on On3Sports. Georgia has an 82.3% chance to gain his commitment. 82.3. He's from Milton, Georgia. He's also looking at that Florida State saying, this is not the program I committed to. These players are looking at Florida State thinking to themselves, man, I would have loved to have been a part of that. But if But if this is the trajectory you're going, I don't know if it's going to get any better. And it doesn't matter. I mean, yes, could Florida State say, you know what, we're going to pay each of you $2 million each to come here. They could do that, and there's a chance that they might commit to it.
But you're not that desperate.
But you're not. These players are not that desperate. They know they can get a good NIL package at Georgia. They know they can get a good NIL package at Texas, and they can go be a part of something that's actually winning, right? Yeah. So if you can find both money and success, you're going to go there. And that makes sense for what's happening.
I 100% get that. And I even meant like Florida State's really not that desperate. Now, we feel desperate, but to pay $2 million for a high school wide receiver, I don't think so. Now maybe you pay that for an offensive lineman. Or defensive lineman, I would go there too. But I do think it's right, man. I think really it's like kids want to be a part of something that they want to jump on a moving train. It takes a special breed of people, you know, to be able to jump on something that they know is going to be a rebuild. And so I also think that the geography thing is a big part of it. I mean, again, like you look back to Malik Clark. I mean, that's a kid who was the number one player, or number two player in South Carolina, decommits from U, commits, flips over to South Carolina. South Carolina probably doesn't have much of a better NIL budget than Florida State. South Carolina is not a team that's immensely more successful than Florida State. They might be having a better year this year, but that's not a top tier program.
No.
But it's in his backyard, and he knows that he can probably get a comparable NIL package there, and they're somewhat close to in success, and they're in the SEC. So, like, again, if you're going to lure kids away from home, and granted, this is why I liked where last year they put a lot of emphasis on recruiting Florida and Georgia kids.
That's right.
You have to draw them out. I mean, again, it's kind of back to like to the restaurant example you use. Like, you know, if that awesome steakhouse that you have or whatever is an hour away, and you're not sure about it, but you know that you have a Longhorn 15 minutes from your house, like, why not just stay home? Because you can get good enough right there. And so I think that's a big part of it. And the same thing with CJ Wiley being close to Georgia. So it's tough, man. I mean, it is, but you're going to have to figure some things out. Because even when you look at Texas, like, they're probably going to lose what Ewers or whatever this year.
Yeah.
But you got Arch Manning who's playing well. So you know what the future of that is, you know, and maybe South Carolina's not quite there, but you know Georgia's going to be competitive. They're not going to have – Georgia's a long way away from having a 1-5 season.
That's right.
And so, it's just – this is the part of having a bad year and a bad offense. And again, like, it's not even a bad year, man. It's not even like you're 3-3 or something like that and you lost a couple close games. You look terrible on the field. So, like, that's really hard. It's a hard sell this year. And we already know, too, that your staff has not been great at recruiting. So, like, if you weren't great at recruiting when you were 23-4, like, we didn't sign a top 10 class off the back of a 13-1 season. How do you expect them to recruit a 1-5 season?
Right. Well, and the thing is, it's just been compounding, right? It's been compounding. You had the snub, and then you had this season. And, you know, I think the misnomer that people assume, and I even assume this, that coming off that 13-1 season, you should have signed a top 5, top 10 recruiting class. But the benefits of that 13-1 season should be felt now. Meaning you were already going to have the class that you kind of had coming into that season already, or coming off that season already, what you had. You're not, it's never the immediate season following a national championship, following an undefeated season that you get. It's the season afterwards, because the assumption is the season after that 13-1 season, you're going to be, you know, 8-4, 9-3, 10-2, 11-1, right? You're going to be somewhere in that range, and the kids are going to see the progress. They're going to say, yes, I want to be a part of that. The problem is, we can't even reap the benefits of that 13-1 season now. It's literally been thrown in the trash. It's done for.
Yeah.
You might as well stop talking. I'm talking to like the people out there. You might as well stop talking about 13-1 because it's gone. We've wasted whatever we could have got from that season on this 1-5 season. We spent it all in the first 5-6 games.
Yeah. I mean, you're hanging on for dear life for some of the recruits that you did get from that successful season. But I mean, still, like you said, you've lost a lot of the goodwill from that. And really, even then, like, you come off of the 10-win season, you know, because again, like you said, you got to kind of look a year back there.
Right.
But you came off a 10-win season. You had a lot of momentum coming into 2023. And then like that season going into that early signing day, you were undefeated by then. You were looking like a national championship team. And so then you only signed the number 12 class, and you're in the state of Florida, man. Again, like we talked about this on a former episode, pretty much every team that's won the national championship in the playoff era has recruited at a top 10 level. They might have one outlier class that falls to like 15 or, but it's never been outside the top 25. And it's primarily top 10 classes. And Florida State under Mike Norvell, and again, granted, we give him a little bit of grace for 2020 and 2021 because of the hardship that he had with, you know, with what he came into. But you've still, the highest you signed is the number 12 coming off a 10-win season going into an undefeated team at right around national signing, early signing day. So they've still yet to sign that top 10 class. And I mean, again, when we're talking about teams that are where you want to be, these teams that are winning national championships, that are making the playoffs, you have to recruit at a better level. So again, yeah, man, I mean, you're right. Like it's hard enough when you can't sign top classes when you're doing good. And correct. Now when you're doing bad, man, it's tough. But you do lose the four-star wide receiver, so out go some new targets here for wide receiver position here by Florida State. Tayshawn Gelsey, I believe I'm saying that right, three-star wide receiver, 6'4", 215 from Jacksonville, currently a Florida commit. From what I was reading up on him, he would be a better fit at tight end, which kind of means he's not a very athletic wide receiver, so not that great. I do like the size at 6'4", 215. But they did offer him as a wide receiver. From what I understand, there is interest. He was coveting a FSU offer early in his commitment. Again, not necessarily going to be a great replacement here for the two four-stars that you already lost. But at some point, you got to get bodies. And so hopefully, I mean, this is a guy that you can at least get in for a visit. Now, the one I do like, the one offer that recently went out that I'm really kind of hoping they can get a flip here on, is Javon Boggs, four-star wide receiver, 6 foot, 200 pounds out of Cocoa, Florida, currently a UCF commit who did just flip from Mizzou. Again, these kids ain't loyal. And it sounds like you have a good chance of flipping him as well because he did kind of leave some promising tidbits in some of his interviews. And really, I think here, like, I don't know why you go to UCF from Mizzou. I mean, Mizzou, again, you guys know, I think Mizzou's a fraud top 10 team. But maybe that has a lot to do with wanting to be closer to home. You know, when you look at why would you go to UCF when you're from, I mean, if you're from Cocoa, Florida, the only thing I can think of is wanting to be closer to home. So if you have a program like Florida State, because UCF's not doing good this year either.
Right.
So if you could pick between Florida State, UCF, you probably have a bigger NIL deal and stuff there. You know, cause I have a friend that covers UCF and he says, look, like we can pay up for one or two, three players a year, but we don't quite have that big NIL budget, like a Florida State or Miami yet. So maybe you can get him to flip to insanely productive receiver here. In 2023, he had 93 receptions, 1,493 yards, and 24 touchdowns. He did visit twice in 2023 on unofficials, but has not been on campus in 2024 yet. So hopefully you can get him in on a visit. He is the number 210 nationally, number 25 wide receiver in that 25 class. So that would be a pretty good pickup there. I think you have a good chance with that one. I think that's going to be one of your kind of your cleanup takes there. But, man, I think it's a good take if you can get him. They did also offer Donovan Murph from Columbia, South Carolina, who just reclassified to 2025 from 2026. But from what I'm reading into it, it doesn't sound like he got a lot of juice here. This sounds like it's going to be a South Carolina versus Clemson battle for him. Mm. Obviously, he's right there with Malik Clark as well. So, you know, man, again, like you got to get one of the two. You got to get someone in the class, period. Like, I'm not confident that you're going to hang on to CJ Wiley, but hopefully you can. But if you can get Boggs and hold on to Wiley, maybe you have a little something there. Now, again, I think this is going to go back to like a lot of the conversations we're going to have in recruiting is like, are you going to be able to hold on to these guys when you make staff changes? Because, you know, wide receiver coach is one of the spots that we really feel like they need to make a change and right. very quickly, because you have just not done good enough, not in recruiting and not in development. I mean, we were running through it earlier. You know, Dugans got here in 2019 at the end of the Willie Taggart era. 2019, you signed no high school wide receivers and no transfers. 2020, you bring in Darion Williamson. Right now, I'm ready to call him a bust. Mm-hmm. Brian Robinson didn't do anything at Florida State. You got nope. Ja'Kai, who's been a steady, solid receiver. And Portier, meh. You know, I can't really call him. I won't call him a bust, but I'm not even going to call him an average college receiver because he just doesn't have the production to meet that. You didn't take any transfers in 2020. So then 2020, you bring in Destin Hill. Granted, the jury's still out on him. You can't blame all that because he had some things that weren't on the coaching staff. Then he got injured. I think he's going to turn out to be a good receiver.
Hopefully.
That was a good get there. Malik McClain left, didn't really do a whole lot for you. Had one decent season there. Josh Burrell was kind of a last minute take there who really never did anything for you. Then you brought in Andrew Parchment as a transfer from Kansas. I know they really played him up, really coached him hard. didn't really turn out to do anything.
Fourth and 14, though.
However, fourth and 14, you will live in, you know, we will hang the banner for you, Parchment, but that's about it. 2022, no high school wide receivers brought in, but you did take a big transfer class. You got Winston Wright. I'll give him a pass on that because of the car accident. I think that's he would have been okay had it not have been for that. Deuce Span, that's a bust. Mm-hmm. Johnny Wilson was obviously very good. I give them credit for that because they only developed him. Right. Yep. They developed him. He came in, only had, I think, 237 yards the year before. Micah Pittman. I won't call him a bust, but I'd say he was average. He was okay.
It's okay.
Went to Utah, didn't really do a whole lot there. Nope. You know, better YouTuber than wide receiver. no offense, guy. Sorry about that. 2023, you bring in Hakeem. That's a hit so far. Yep. I mean, which he hasn't really done a ton.
Yeah.
He hasn't done a ton, but he's starting injured. To look good. I mean, he was injured last year. Didn't have much of a quarterback this year. He looked pretty good in the game where Brock Glenn came back or as the starter. So we'll see how that goes.
The jury's still out on him. Yeah.
Right. Goldie Lawrence transferred out. Didn't do anything there. Vandravius Jacobs transferred out. I think he's at South Carolina now. I think he actually is doing okay there. And then you brought in Keon Coleman. Great pickup. Great job picking him up.
He was an NFL-level wide receiver already.
Right. So that's an NFL-level guy that you didn't do anything for and probably had a lot to do with NIL more than it did, you know, I want to go play for Ron Dugans. Mm-hmm. Now, 2024 is really where you made your hay. I mean, you got LaWayne McCoy.
Yep.
We've heard great things, but we haven't seen it yet.
Correct.
Elijah Moore.
Yep.
Heard great things. Haven't seen it yet. B.J. Gibson, I think he actually did get on the field against Clemson. Have not seen much there yet. Camden Fryer, I think he's going to be good in the future, but that's a legacy recruit, so you were kind of a shoe in there. So the thing with that, though, with that class is, like, we also heard good things about this offensive line.
That's true.
And then we saw it on a game day, so I still got to see it from them. But I do think those guys, I do think that 24 class is going to be good. I mean, I saw a video the other day of LaWayne McCoy in practice, and I'm like, what are we doing? Why is this guy not playing? Why is he not playing? I mean, he's out here making people miss. Then, of course, you bring in Malik Benson. I won't call Malik Benson a bust. I don't think he's as electric as you thought he was going to be. I think a lot of it, again, had to do with poor quarterback play.
Yep.
And then Jaylen Brown, I still think that's TBD because he's only a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
We'll see. But again, man, so like when you look back, he's really only had one good high school recruiting class. And those guys are still all TBD right now. So, like, I think, man, you got to move on. And I will say this, and I'll kick it back to you, but not only are we talking about that from a recruiting perspective, but 2022 drop passes were a problem. They cost you the NC State game. 2023 drop passes were a problem. 2024, you lead the ACC in drop passes. Both of your quarterbacks at FSU hold two of the top five drop pass percentage spots per PFF. So, like, not
in
one
country,
but two in the power four, you have
in the country, basically.
Right. You have two of the top five highest drop rates in power four. It's ridiculous. And you have the lowest catch rate in the ACC. Now, again, some of that can be attributed to poor quarterback play by DJU because the inaccuracy. But I mean, we saw on Saturday where, like, how many passes hit you directly in the hands and you drop it. So, like, the recruiting and the development is not there. At least what, you know, we're going to talk about O-line next. The recruiting has been there. The development has not. At receiver, you really aren't getting either one.
No. I mean, like you said, this last class was your first actually really good wide receiver collection class. And to see the regression of catching, like, usually, Jesse, if I'm wrong, tell me, but usually when you can't catch and you play wide receiver, they move you to defensive back, right? That's
exactly.
The old joke. Right.
Yeah.
If you can't catch as wide receiver, you got to play DB.
Yeah.
It feels like it feels like you mentioned this to me. I think it was either in an episode or in a text message. You mentioned how somebody had said that it looks like the receivers are fighting the ball.
Yeah. Josh Pate said that on his national show.
That it looks like they're fighting the ball, like they're trying to defend against catching the ball. That's a DB, brother. That's a DP. That's not a wide receiver. Why do we lead the nation? Okay. The power four, which is basically the nation to me. Why do we lead the nation in drop catches, drop passes? That's ridiculous. We are supposed to have some of the best wide receivers in the country, and we're regressing. Our hands are getting worse. Is that even a thing? Is that a thing? Now, again, like you said, DJU, you know, was inaccurate in some. He, you know, I mean, gosh, the three straight overthrows in the end zone, like, totally understand that. But when the ball has been catchable, meaning in the radius of anywhere here, we're dropping balls. And so to me, the Ron Dugans experiment, love you. He's a no-blooded. He went to Florida State. You know, man, love you in that sense. But the coaching aspect has failed. This is one of those short-term pains for long-term gains. You might end up, you're going to, I'm just
about to say, you already got short-term pain.
You already got short-term pain. You're 8 out of 10 chance you're about to lose CJ Wiley. I'm gonna just go ahead and put it out there. You're about to lose CJ Wiley to probably Georgia. You might as well just go ahead and make the switch now. You might as well just go ahead and fire him. Go get a recruiter who can. I mean, gosh, Ohio State's got Brian Hartline. Look at all of those kids he's developing at Ohio State. I mean, he's killing it with the wide receiver group. You know, Texas and their wide receiver coach. They got Jamie French, who we were desperately on and lost out to. Like, we got to go get recruiters, and especially at that wide receiver position as well.
And that's the thing, is you're losing a lot of really good players out of your own backyard that you should be landing. I mean, again, look at Jeremiah Smith. Like, the dude, I bet he has caught more one-handed passes than Florida State has caught passes this season. And, like, it is, it's just, it's depressing to watch. And so, yeah, I think the recruiting and the development has not been there. So, I mean, really, at this point, you know, and what we're going to get in, this is going to be a conversation, a topic of conversation when we talk about the O-line. But if you had Malik Clark, if you had Daylon McCutcheon, if you held on to CJ Wiley, man, I mean, I still think you needed to fire him, but you had a really good class there. Now that it's falling apart, you literally have no reason to keep it.
I have no reason.
Right. And again, like we said, man, love you. Mean it, Ron Dugans. You're an old-blooded. You were a great wide receiver yourself, so I don't know why it's not translating, but it's just not, and it's not good enough. And so you got to look at making a change there, and I think you need to go out and get a recruiter and a guy who can at least teach guys how to catch the ball, because it just looks bad. Maybe we need to move a DB to wide receiver. Who knows? They might can catch someone. Can Charles Lester play wide receiver or something? Like, what are we doing here?
Why aren't we going two-way with him? And again, you could say, you know, you might have the argument for us. Well, Michael, Jesse, you know, some of this has to be on the players. You're right. Absolutely. Some of this has to be on the players. Like, how are they regressing this bad? How are they not catching the ball? How are they not focused? But at the end of the day, the buck stops with the coaching staff.
Right.
The buck stops with Ron Dugans. He has to get his players to be played better, to show up in those moments. You know, and this is not just happening in the game. I mean, the practice reports that we read out there, there are a ton of drops happening in those practices as well, too. So this is an epidemic that is now, like, cascaded itself across the wide receiver group. I mean, you saw it last year. There were issues with drops last year. I mean, go back and look at the ACC championship game for Brock. I mean, Keon dropped a wide open pass. Yeah. I mean, there was no one around him. The ball literally hit him in his hands. It was a drop problem. We knew Johnny Wilson had drop issues before. I mean, this has now become, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Like, this is now permeating throughout the program over the last several seasons this drop issue has gotten worse and worse.
Right. Well, and I mean, again, like, you look at the recruiting aspect, you miss out on Jamie French, you miss out on Jeremiah Smith, you miss out on Travis Hunter, like, you miss out on Marvis Aaron Jr.
Yeah.
Like, all these guys that you could have gotten here who can catch, you can't land them as recruits. And then if they can't catch, you can't coach it out of them. So what are we doing here? And so, I mean, like, you just got to make a change there. But then we'll move on to offensive line. Now we're going to get a tidbit of good news here, but then we're going to have a conversation that may not be the most cheery, but again, guys, I'm sorry. Like, we want to be more positive on the show, but there's only so much you can do here. But on the good side of things, Florida State does get a commitment from four-star offensive tackle Mario Nash Jr. He did decommit from Mississippi State earlier, just not very long ago, had a visit to Florida State at the Clemson game, had a good time there, and then ends up committing to FSU. Now, I think after the decommitment of McCutcheon, I think they pressed him, which is what they did with with Julian Armella, whenever they thought that they were going to was that Travis Hunter the year
after
they
signed him? Yep.
After he decommitted, I think they pushed Armella to commit so they could have some positive momentum there to kind of cover up a black eye there. I think that's what they did with this one. I think they pushed him, or they paid him, or they dropped the bag, or whatever they had to do to get him in the boat to try and make that loss not look so bad, to kind of distract you. But either way, you're getting a good offensive lineman. And you know, it's kind of funny. I was joking with somebody earlier. Like, I mean, we need wide receivers because obviously we just talked about how bad we are catching the ball. But you know, if I had to trade a four-star offensive lineman for a four-star wide receiver, I'd probably do it any day because that's where we need the most help. And that's where it's hardest to find help in the portal is on the offensive line, too. Good quality help. And so you do get Mario Nash, four-star offensive tackle. He's listed as an interior offensive line on 247, but he's slated to be an offensive tackle. 6'4", 280, 279 nationally. Interior offensive lineman is ranked 14th there. He does play basketball and also competes in track and field. He was the offensive line MVP of the Under Armour camp in Atlanta this year. He did have offers from Tennessee, Ole Miss, Bama, LSU, and Clemson. I know he took an official to, I think it was LSU, and Ole Miss. So, like, they were probably committable offers if they're taking you in on an official visit there. Obviously, Mississippi State is one of the only teams that's having a worse season than us. So that kind of helps you out there. You know, I think the thing with Nash right now is really you got to hold on to him. I mean, you feel good that he committed to you when you were 1-5. So, like, obviously, if you lose again, it's not going to be like, oh, wow, I can't believe they lost. Well, we've lost about every other game. But Mississippi kids are really hard to pull out of that state. So it is going to be a battle to hang on to him. But again, man, this is a good get for Florida State, and you have a really good offensive line class. Now, before we get into the discussion on that, I do know they also offered a recent Purdue decommit. Man, some of these names I wish I could pronounce. Takayan Whitsett, three-star offensive tackle, 6'5", 265. He is the number 48 offensive tackle out of the state of Tennessee. NC State will be a contender here. He did take an official to them, and they made a good impression on him. But, you know, three-star offensive tackle, not what you need, but you're taking bodies. At the same time, you know, you have a really good offensive line class now, and that's kind of what we're going to get into. This is the hard part about the end of the season, right? This is a conversation that we've had before that we're going to kind of get into again now is like, what do you do with Alex Atkins? And, you know, you brought up a good analogy the other day where you say, do you suffer the short-term pain to go for the long-term gain? And I think with Atkins, that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, when you look at this, really, one of the only ways to fix this offensive line is to get blue chip offensive linemen in here that can play. And so right now, committed, you have Solomon Thomas, five-star number one offensive tackle. Like, to get him and keep him on this team in this class would be massive. That would be absolutely huge. Then you have Peyton Joseph, four-star, number 10 interior offensive lineman. And, of course, as we just mentioned, Mario Nash Jr., four-star, number 14 interior offensive lineman. It does sound like some of your offensive linemen are the guys that are committed in this class that don't seem to be going anywhere. So the thing that I think the question here becomes, man, is like, you need these guys to come in here to be able to fix this. Because right now, as we've talked about time and time again, that the offensive line, the trenches in general, like the defensive line is a whole nother conversation that we're not going to have today, but that needs to be fixed too. But the offensive line is your glowing problem, and it has to be fixed.
Yeah.
The thing is, Alex Atkins has actually been a good recruiter. Like, he signed a ton of blue chip offensive linemen. This is one of his best classes that he's had since he's been here as far as quality goes. It's not the biggest, but it's a very quality class. But he hasn't developed any of them so far. I mean, Jalen Early is the only one that really looks like he's got any kind of promise. Andre Otto is a guy that is starting for you now. And I do like that 2024 class with Jonathan Daniels, Itiati, Ty Hilton, Jaden Todd. And then, you know, Lucas Simmons is a guy out of the 2023 class that I think is going to be very good for you. Remember, he came from overseas. Yep. He has not played a lot of American football. So we knew that was a bit of a project there, but he's like 6'8", full tackle body. I think he can be a starter for you next year. The problem is this, like, he can recruit, but he has not shown the ability to develop yet. And so what concerns me is that you sign another good class and it turns out not to do anything. And so the way I look at this is like, this is a tough decision. I don't envy Mike Norvell having to make this decision. Now, either way, I think you should go get an offensive coordinator and move him back to being just the offensive line coach.
Yeah.
But you need these recruits to rebuild this offensive line. And if you fire him, you run the risk of losing those recruits. I think if you do fire him, you need to go out and like, you need to pay almost offensive defensive coordinator money for an offensive line coach. You got to go get the best offensive line coach you can get to try and hold on to these guys, because this is killing you, this offensive line. You know, we talked about, like, you're probably not going to steal Georgia's offensive line coach, but you need something like that. Like, go get Iowa's offensive line coach. Go get Wisconsin. Give me some of that Midwest beef, a guy who can recruit that area, because it's been bad, and so you need it. So it's like it comes down to you need this level of recruiting, but do you – I mean, let's be honest. Like, he has the worst offensive line unit in the country right now. Right. So how do you bring him back for another year? But do you – you need his recruiting – but do you keep him long enough to let him ruin these recruits? And that's not mm-hmm. will, but I mean, his track record shows that he's not been a good developer yet. And so, man, it's a tough situation to be in, because he can recruit and you need these guys, but he hasn't shown ability to do anything with them yet. And, you know, something that I'll kick it back to you on this, but something we were talking about before was that it really does feel like, because of how bad things are, like Mike Norvell is going to get one more shot at this. Yeah. I mean, you also have to think, like, Michael Alford might have signed him to that extension, but this was not Michael Alford's hire. So, like, if push comes to shove and things get terrible, you know, he may look at it like, well, I'm going to go get my guy. I'm going to make a hire. Because, you know, that's a big thing for ADs.
That's
being able to go out and show that you brought in somebody that did well. And, I mean, look at what he did with baseball. Like, you fired Mike Martin's son and went in and got us back to the College World Series in 2 years. So, like, he did well there. So, like, you know, there's probably not a ton of loyalty there. But at the same time, like, I think the problem here is Mike Norvell's probably going to get about one more shot at this, right? I mean, at the end of the season, he's going to be able to make a lot of coaching changes and overhaul the staff on the field, off the field, how they go about things. And then you're going to get a chance to fix this in like 25, 26, and maybe 27, depending on how things go. Because in 2025, if you come out and you're 1-5 again, I don't know that you even get 2026. I mean, you might 2026, but at that point you're struggling.
Yep.
And so I feel like with the offensive line coach, you really are in a do or die situation right now. Like, you either do it or you don't, because you're either going to ride with him until you both go. Because if you change right now and you go get somebody new, you have a chance for someone to come in and have 2 to 3 years to fix this.
Right.
If you don't change because you want to hold on to the recruits, because again, man, it's a lot of this, like, a lot of the offensive line is coaching, but a lot of it is just having dudes. Like, again, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, they're not rolling out well-coached 3 stars. They're rolling out 4 and 5 stars.
That's right.
But the last thing I'll say is, like, at the same time, if you don't change offensive line coach right now, then in 2 to 3 years, if this product still looks like it does, you're probably both going to be out the door. And so this you really got to kind of decide, like, are you going to roll with Atkins or are you not? Now, I'm on the side of letting him go and taking that short-term pain. But, man, it's so hard when you look at the poor recruiting that – or the development that has led to a lot of recruits leaving. So you don't even have a lot of the good recruits that you've even signed on the roster anymore.
Right.
To risk losing Solomon Thomas, Peyton Joseph, and Mario Nash, that's going to be a massive loss.
Yeah.
But man, I mean, I you got one of the worst offensive lines in the country this year. They've regressed since 2022. I just don't know that you can bring that back.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, man, when you look at this offensive line over the last several years, and you did an incredible episode on this, so I encourage you guys to go back and check out that episode Jesse does. I mean, because he goes into clear-cut detail on the problems with this offensive line. This is where I came up with the notion of short-term pain versus long-term gain. And yes, you do. You have a really good, so far, offensive line class coming committed for next year, with Solomon Thomas being the number one rated offensive tackle. You got Mario Nash.
If you lose Thomas, then forget about it. That's the only reason I'm hanging on to him, really.
And I understand that. I totally can understand that, because you worked really hard to get him. The only way to fix this problem is by getting better offensive linemen in the fold to try to get the trenches much better. The problem is that we've gotten other good offensive linemen in the fold. We've gotten them here. Now, I will give the benefit of the doubt of, like, early on in the 2020 to 2021, you just had to get bodies. You just had to get bodies. And so maybe some of those bodies you got weren't Florida State quality bodies. That's why they didn't work out. But man, when you go through the list, Jesse, it is like receipts at a murder trial. You know what I'm saying?
And it's bad.
It's bad. I mean, Robert Scott, I mean, he was good for one season. He's been injured. And since he's been back, hasn't been good. Thomas Schrader, gone. Zane Heron, gone. Lloyd Willis, gone. Rod Orr, gone. Brian Essies played one game. Yeah, whatever. Julian Mettel, the gem of the class of the 2022, I think it was, class, whatever it was, hasn't played a lick. Hadn't even got on the field yet. Jalen Early had the highest PFF grade in the game this season. So there you go. You got one. Daltrey Richardson, gone. Sapp, gone. Woody, gone. Charleston, gone. Lucas Simmons has yet to play, but we know that's a project. Andre Otto started the last two games. Daniels has yet to play. ET yet to play. Helton, yet to play. Todd, yet to play. That's not even counting the transfers that you brought in. Dante Love Taylor, Dylan's Given, Jazz Turstein, Dimitri Emmanuel, Ira Henry, Dante Lucas, Jalen Gross, Kalen Lyles, Bless Harris. Like, you just go down and down, and a lot of those players either didn't work out or they did all right. They did okay. Yeah. And so the evidence is stacked up against you that, man, you've gotten decent to good players in. And the development has only regressed. We used to be able to run the ball. I mean, in our worst seasons in 2020 and 2021, the one thing we could depend on was running the ball. 2022, 10-3. Man, we were running roughshod. Even when we lost three straight games, we were still putting up 200 yards against people. We were doing it. And then in 2023, you began to really see the regression. We outside of Trey Benson and Lawrence Toffoli making explosive plays, I mean, it was 2 yards in a cloud of dust, or Jordan Travis making something happen. I mean, The fact of the matter is, if we could run the ball, North Alabama doesn't happen.
Right.
Think about that, Jesse. Yeah. We don't lose Jordan Travis. We're probably in the playoffs. Right.
Yeah.
But we couldn't run the ball.
Yeah. You could pass block decently in 2023, but you couldn't run block either. I mean, you got under 100 yards against basically every decent rush defense that you played.
Exactly. And so we're in this situation because the development hasn't been there. Yes, you know, Alex Axton might be a really, you know, decent recruit. But even in that, there's question marks of that because, I mean, there is, you know, and this is rumors and, you know, who knows what the rumors are, whether they're true or not. But, man, I've been hearing that he's one of those coaches that has said, you know what, we're going to rely on the transfer portal. We might get one or two good high school, but the transfer portal is going to be a thing. Everybody knows that the transfer portal is not the place to get an offensive lineman. You have to develop them. Yes, we got a Dylan Given. That fell into our laps from Notre Dame. That was like the one few good ones. Yes, we got a Dimitri Emmanuel. That was somewhat okay. Outside of that, name me a transfer portal offensive lineman that has been all-star, that has been electric, that has been dominant. You can't, because those have to be developed from day one. You have to spend years working on them, and we're just not seeing that. So to me, I get it. If you fire Alex Atkins after this season, there's a chance that you could lose out on those recruits. Now, you could also, you know, wait till they sign on the dotted line, get them in, and then fire them. Maybe we'll talk about that in a little bit. But, you know, I know there's a chance for that. But I think you have to look at the long-term viability of can I win with this guy? Can I actually win? Can I actually win and develop really good offensive linemen? Yes, I won. You know, we won 19 straight. In 2022 to 2023. Yes, we did that. Yes, those offensive linemen were decent pass blockers in 23, really good run blockers and decent pass blockers in 22 and really good run blockers in 21 and 20. But I've not seen the progression. The other side of this also is, too, that Mike has to consider is I maybe got one, like you said, I maybe got one to two. I'm going to be generous. I'm going to say he has two seasons to get this cleaned up.
I think he does.
I think he has two seasons.
Once he makes changes, you got to give those changes time to cook.
Exactly. So I think he's two seasons. And I think in his mind, he's thinking, knowing Mike and his pride and as a coach football, right, you're going to want to fix it next year. And so he's probably also thinking about the fact that if I get rid of him, man, I literally am either going to have to pay out of the wazoo to keep those guys, or I'm just going to have to take it on the chin, and we're just going to have to try to build, and I got to hope that I can get Mike Alford to understand that this is going to take a little bit to get back to this place. Because we made some terrible decisions. Under my leadership, we made some terrible decisions. And so I just think it's hard. This is a $10 million problem that you and I don't get paid $10 million for.
No, I agree. And I really think the thing is, like, when you look at it, you feel good about some of the young pieces you have at receiver, quarterback, and tight end. So really the offensive line is the one place on the offense that you don't feel good about.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you land these three guys and you have enough that you feel okay about rebuilding the offensive line through with a Lucas Simmons and a Jalen Early and some of these guys, but you know, these guys probably aren't, even if you sign them this year. Now, I think Solomon Thomas is a guy that may be able to start for you next year. But again, you're looking at guys that are probably at least 2 years down the road if you can get them in. But again, yeah, I mean, you think about like even the transfers. The best offensive lineman you've had under Alex Atkins has been Dylan Gibbons. And he was three years at Notre Dame. So I don't know how much you really developed him. And he was a late take anyway. So again, like I think that was really just a plug and play guy there for you. So, I mean, you really haven't even seen, like even then, I know sometimes the G5 to P5 doesn't always translate. But Byers, man, he was a multi-time all-conference, I believe all-American player there, and has just went downhill. I mean, now, Dimitri Emmanuel, maybe you can give Atkins credit for that because he was a Atkins recruit at Charlotte.
That's
so
right.
So he was developed there. But, I mean, he left and had a few years there, too, and Emmanuel was the first-team all-ACC guy. But, again, like, and there's been other coaches that haven't been able to fix this either. But, man, I definitely think that, one, you need – a dedicated offensive coordinator and not to be Alex Atkins. I don't think he's up to snuff to be an offensive coordinator for you. But I do agree, like, man, I think there is the conversation like we were talking about before with the offensive linemen and it's almost like the quarterbacks. You know, when you look at that first crop of quarterbacks that they took, like Willie Taggart didn't sign a high school quarterback for 2 years. So you had to bring in some bodies. I don't think really any of those guys outside of maybe A.J. Duffy was really – anybody that should have been on Florida State's roster anyway. That's but right. Given where you were at the time and what you needed, you had to take some guys. And so then it's kind of like, okay, well, the problem is you didn't get anything out of any of them. Like you couldn't even turn any of these offensive linemen out of the, you know, however many we named, like 10 offensive linemen, 12. You've gotten something out of maybe two. So 2 out of 12 hit rate is not good. You couldn't get anything out of any of these guys. And I will say that, like, I know with offensive linemen, you typically take a ton of offensive linemen in your class because these guys are really hard to hit on. I mean, you just never know because they're hard. They're almost hard to evaluate because, I mean, let's be honest. If you're 6'4 to 6'6, 300 pounds in high school,
right,
you're gonna mow over everybody anyway because that's it's just a size and talent advantage. But maybe a lot of the guys that they took early on just weren't that great, but you got nothing out of any of them. And I think the same conversation comes with the quarterbacks. Like, you got nothing out of any of those early guys. Now, you have three on your roster that you feel like you should get something out of. And again, Tony Tokars was not your quarterback's coach for all those busts. He was off the field, and off-the-field coaches weren't allowed to coach until this year. So that's why I think he's okay, because he did something with Jordan Travis. He, you know, DJ was beyond help. And then Brock Glenn looks pretty good so far. So I don't know, man. It's tough to say, but like, what if you hang on to Alex Atkins and he brings in more blue chip recruits but gets nothing out of them? That could cost Mike Norvell his job.
Yep.
And so I just think, man, I really do think, and that's not to say that you can't bring in another offensive line coach that can recruit as good as he can, but also develop.
Right. So, that's what we need.
Right. And so to me, like, I would probably still make the change there. But I mean, you got a really good class. And you know, this always gets back to like the commit to the program, not the coach. And so maybe you could hang on to like a Peyton Joseph or something like that. I think Solomon Thomas should have a hard time hanging on to.
Yeah.
But we'll see, man. I mean, it's a tough situation to be in. We don't, like you said, we don't make $10 million to make that decision, but he can recruit. I mean, I'll give it to him. A man can recruit, but if it doesn't translate to anything on the field, then it doesn't matter. It does not matter. And so really to look at Tribe 25 overall, man, it's just disappointing. Like right now, when you look at the 247 composite rankings, you're at 37th. Before you got Nash, you dropped to 52nd for a brief moment in time.
Right.
But now you're back up to 37th. You were 34th or 35th before the decommitment and the commitment happened. But that's just not good enough. And I know On3, they used a little bit of a different system for rankings. I don't know how they got such a big difference. But you're 18th in On3, which is okay, but it's still not good enough. You have to be recruiting, especially in year five coming off of a 23-4 run. You need to be in the top 10 if you want to be a contender. But you're 18th there. Now, the good thing is your player average rating is 7th. So you have a very slim class. But it's all pretty much quality recruits. But when I talk about that slim class, man, You only have 11 commits right now. You are tied with Purdue at 11, but only Colorado and Vanderbilt in the Power Four have less commits than you do. So, like, you are just not signing. You are not getting any commits in this class, and it's a problem. And what really makes me nervous is, you know, you're 37th right now. And while I do think Florida State can win some games on the back half of the season, you're probably going to go 3-9, 4-8, maybe 5-7, like if you really play above your head, but I don't think that's going to happen. So you're going to look at a bad season. And what concerns me the most is we already know that this staff has a hard time closing. This is one of the biggest problems with their recruiting. Like, they can get guys to commit, but they are terrible at closing. And so, even if you got the guys that you have now, because we talked about, again, it's a small class, but a good class. How many of these guys are you going to lose on signing day? Yeah. Because it's going to be tough, man. And if you get one or two guys flipped, this class is going to be in the tank. And again, like we said, for the 20th time, like, if you want to compete, if you want to be a contender for conference and championships and playoffs, you got to be recruiting at a minimum of a top 15 level. Really, you need to be in the top 10. And right now, the best class you've had since in 5 years since they arrived is 12th. And so you're just not getting it done. I mean, again, coming off a 13-1 season after a 10-3 season and you're 37th, that is terrible. And right. So, again, with an 11-guy class, even if you add a couple to this and keep everything you got, you're going to have to go take 10 or 15 transfers, which is exactly what we said you didn't need to do, because now, again, you're building a foundation from the transfer portal. So, I mean, again, man, it's just – the recruiting has been the biggest misstep by the staff, and that's why I think you got to have so many changes on here. So, give me some thoughts on the overall class, and then we'll move on from the recruiting topic. But yeah, I mean, it's a problem. It's a big problem. And again, it's a roller coaster. You lose one, you get one. But regardless of the fact, man, 37th in recruiting is not going to get it done.
No, it's not. And you, like you said, we've only regressed. We were up this trajectory, and because of what's happening now, we're headed down the trajectory again. We're going backwards, which is not what we're supposed to be doing. And I'm not saying you can't give up on this class. But this is a lost class.
Yeah.
Like we need to call a spade a spade. This is a lost class. And what I mean by that is, unless you somehow miraculously win out, right? You win the last six games. Let's see.
Yeah.
Then you're going to have very little momentum, because this is likely, in my mind, a 2-10 team. I think I only see one more win until I see what this offense can do. And we talked about this in our other show. Until I see what this offense can do, I don't know what else. I don't have any hope to hold on to. So I'm looking at I'm going worst case scenario, a 2-10 season.
And you're going to fire a bunch of people.
And you're going to fire a bunch of people. So at a 2-10 season with a bunch of people getting fired, at minimum, at least three. There should be at least three people. If there is less than three people fired, we're going to have problems. Okay?
We're getting pitchforks out.
Exactly. So at minimum, three people are getting fired. That's not even counting all the people on your recruiting staff that are behind the scenes that probably need to be looked at as well, too. Yep. All the people on your support staff that need to be looked at for evaluations, because they missed on evaluations this last season. That's not counting the fact that you need to look at your health and nutrition staff, because dadgummit, we have way too many injuries. And this has been 4 years in a row that we've had at least six or seven that have season ending injuries. What is going on?
Yeah.
You know, so there's a lot of firings that need to take place. There's a reset of this program. And so when you look at this class, it's a lost class. You don't give up on it. You try your darndest to go get some, go spend some money and go get the best players you can possibly get. It doesn't mean that you need to go portal crazy and bring in 20 to 30 players. I don't think you need to do that. I still think that, Jesse, you and I have maybe the right idea, which is, man, go spend that money on the high school recruits. Go overpay for some really good kids right now.
Yeah.
And then go get 5 to 8. I up my range a little bit. So 5 to 8. Transfer portal, can't miss day one starters. That's going to help you bridge the gap until you are able to rebuild from this devastating of a season.
Yeah, no, I agree. And really, almost one thing that makes me worried that we're getting these offensive line classes like we are is that'll be an excuse to hang on to Alex Atkins. And so maybe, you know, we'll see how many people Mike fire. But no, I agree, man. I think the two things that are most important right now is Mike Norvell needs to get involved in these recruitments, because he is going to be the one thing that's going to be there. And then two, like you said, man, you might have to overpay for this class so you can hang on to them, because daggone it, you got to sign somebody out of high school. And so we'll see. But yeah, I know. I do agree. I think you're going to have to up that transfer portal number, because right now you're not going to have enough high school guys to fill a class. And so I think you may end up looking at needing 10 guys in the portal, because you just don't have enough high school guys that you can sign. So
that's right.
It's going to be interesting, man. And I would almost, I don't know. I mean, I'm less high on the portal than I used to be, but at the same time, if you're going to talk about just taking a bunch of 3-stars, man, then go find me some impact transfers.
Exactly.
And pay up for it the best you can. And that may mean letting some guys walk too.
Exactly. You cannot take 3-stars. Make sure you guys hear us say this. We're not saying go overpay for some 3-stars. No. We're saying go find those high 4-stars. Man, find me a 5-star and just say, look, I know we had a 2-10 season. I know it looks bad. I got 2 million right now.
Yeah. And
because
I think
you're part of the solution.
Right. I think you can have a couple of 3-stars, but they're going to have to be very well evaluated 3-stars.
Exactly.
You can't rely on anybody else. I need Mike Norvell to be watching them practices and them tapes and them games and know who you want. Exactly. But the last thing before we move on from high school recruiting is actually something that's going to change with high school recruiting. They are doing away with the NLI, not to be confused with NIL. I'm sure a lot of us would rather see NIL go away than NLI. But after 60 years of being in place, it is going away. And a lot of this is something that is moving more towards with that House settlement that's expected to be passed. And it's going back and forth now, but to be passed and put in place. This is something that's going to change recruiting and the way it goes about. Now, they're very similar to the structure that is put in place here for these, but it's a lot of changes that are coming in place with the House settlement. Michael has more details on this, so I am going to give him the floor and let him talk about some of the stuff with the NLI elimination.
Yeah, NLI, man, started in 1964. Was a contractual agreement between the recruit and the school, basically saying that you're going to come here, and that in a lot of ways that the school kind of owned its right to you, at least for that first year. And then if you wanted to, you could go into the transfer portal, right? But then back in those days, you had to sit out. If you were in transfer, you had to sit out a year unless you had a extenuating circumstance for you to be able to have immediate eligibility. Well, after 60 years, like you said, they're now getting rid of the NLI, National Letter of Intent. And basically what's going to happen is now what is replacing that is the financial aid agreement that players were already signing. So what they were finding was, and this was happening way more in basketball than it was in football, was that basketball players didn't want to sign NLIs. They wanted to sign financial aid agreement, because financial aid agreement basically secured your scholarship, but it didn't lock you to that school. So if something happened, if you wanted to get out, if a coach left or you changed your mind or something happened, you could just get out of it, because it's a financial aid agreement. You can get out of financial aid agreement. You couldn't technically get out of the NLI. What they also end up finding is that the NLI, National Letter of Intent, it's basically was an illegal document, because there was no consideration for the recruit. It was only consideration for the school. It didn't lock the school in to keeping your scholarship, but it locked you in to staying a part of that recruiting class. And so they're getting rid of that. And what's going to happen is players will now sign just the financial aid agreement. The hope, what they're speculating, is that the financial aid agreement will now turn into an official contract between the school and the player. So now both parties actually receive consideration. The school receives consideration from the player, meaning the player gets to use their talents for the school, and then the player receives consideration from the school, which means the school pays the player. And so that this is where the contracts are going. And this is, like you said, this is all in connection with the House settlement that, like you said, was going back and forth, but the judge finally officially agreed to a idea of the settlement now. And now they're just fine tuning some stuff. And part of that is that the players will now go with the NCAA to Congress to advocate for making this settlement a law, which will then and bring in probably what we're fast tracking towards is unionization with the players and the schools, creating a collective bargaining, which is why these financial aid agreements are going to be attached to that. Now, that's the grandeur hope, Jesse, of all of this, right? Financial contract, financial aid agreement, no law, both parties, school and player, gets consideration. That's going to take about 2 to 3 years for that to actually officially be like the full thing. In the meantime, as you and I both know, that coaches and agents will take full advantage of the situation, because when a player signs a financial aid agreement, it does not lock them into the school. So For instance, Solomon Thomas could sign a financial aid agreement on National Signing Day, whatever it is. Sign it. Hey, I'm going to Florida State. And Georgia, now, according to the NCAA, when a player signs a financial aid agreement, it's supposed to, and I quote, prohibit other schools from recruiting communications. Okay? That's what the NCAA said. But you and I both know that if Solomon Thomas signs his financial agreement, Georgia or Alabama or some other school will contact Solomon Thomas's parents, grandmoms, uncles, and says, hey, we have X amount of dollars for Solomon if he will renege on his financial agreement. And it will go up through the line back to Solomon Thomas, and Solomon Thomas could potentially not sign with Florida State because the financial agreement removes any liability for that kid that has to come. Basically, the school doesn't own his rights anymore. And so you know schools are going to take advantage of this. Hopefully, Florida State's also taking advantage of this at some point, right?
Yes, please.
please do. So there's going to be just some murkiness with this because the NLI, National Letter of Intent, has been eliminated immediately, meaning this signing class, they will not be signing NLIs. They'll be signing financial aid agreements. And so college football, like we always say, this ain't your granddaddy's college football. It's changing. It's changing fast.
Yeah, and tampering has been around with the portal and all this stuff, so it's going to stay. And I mean, it's going to be like now you can't even feel confident when they sign the letter on signing day. You got to be nervous until they enroll and they're on the team. And even then, like this new trend of players redshirting with the intention to hit the portal at the end of the year, man, it's crazy. I mean, this is insane. But this is what happens when you don't have anybody governing college football except for the weekend NCAA who does nothing for anybody. It's crazy, man. Again, times are changing. And I mean, again, I think your hope is that the house settlement and these types of things will kind of bring it back to a centric point where it's not just complete disarray. But man, I mean, it's times are changing. This ain't your grandpa's college football.
Exactly. And I want to just make clear for our listeners out there, whether podcasts or on YouTube, Jesse and I we're not saying that we want to go back. I mean, we're not saying that we don't want these kids to have powers, because there was a time and place where these kids were forced to believe that a $200,000 scholarship was good enough for you putting your body on the line while the school was making billions of dollars off your back. We're not saying that was fair. We are for kids having power. But just as coaches have buyouts in their contracts, just as there are rules with contractual play, this free-for-all is not healthy for the game. It's just not. Yeah. And there needs to be rules in place. There needs to be a commissioner. There needs to be boundaries. There needs to be collective bargaining. There needs to be an agreement that if you show up and you sign this paper and we pay you money, and by money, I mean your hard money, Jesse, my hard money, we're paying to show up. We're giving money to the program. When we do those things, man, you are obligated to perform what we want. If not, we can boot you. But right now we can't do that. And these players can just leave on their own. And they can collect all the money they want to, and they could just quit halfway through the season. Now, listen, that UNLV player who was supposedly supposed to get that money and didn't get that money, I mean, that's a whole nother deal,
right?
Whatever it is. But when we do give you the money and you're just loafing, you know, somebody just made a pick six and you're just like, I'm gonna just jog. Nah, man.
You know, as sad as it is to say, I mean, it needs to be like the NFL.
Yep.
Where there's contracts and there's agreements and you're locked in and there's performance bonuses. And if you're not performing, you can get cut and they don't have to pay you once you get cut. And I mean, not everybody in the NFL gets paid the same. Nope. So it's like, it's just, there's no rules right now. And that's the problem. Like, we're not saying that it necessarily needs to go back to 50 years ago.
Right.
But what we got right now is an absolute
disaster. It's not sustainable.
It's not sustainable. It's really not, especially coming out of the fans' pocket. But that's going to do it for recruiting. And so now we're going to move on. We're going to kind of wrap up the show with a little bit faster moving talk. But I first want to give a shout out to the NFL Knowles.
Let's go.
Last night, the 49ers took on the Seahawks, and Renardo Green got his first NFL interception, had a pick in primetime. It was a nice pick, too, late in the game that really helped them out there. I also had six tackles in that game. Tatum Bethune, also a 49er, had a fumble recovery on a special teams play. I also saw where, I'm sorry, Michael, because I know you Rams are kind of, they're like the Knowles this year, man. It's just carrying over. It's not doing so good. But I did see where Fisk and Verse are top three in pressure among rookies. Keon Coleman also is playing well. He had that one where he caught the fourth down catch the other day and turned into a touchdown. So, man, like, it really does go to show you that how special the guys on that 2023 team were, that they are showing out in the NFL right now too. So, like, they're doing really good, man. So I do want to give them a quick shout out at looking at what these guys are doing in the NFL, man. That was a really, really special team.
Man, it was just such a special team. I saw that they put up a plaque on the practice walls outside there to commemorate that 2023 team because of the snub, because they were and dynamic. They were lovable. They were easy to fall in love with. They were great sportsmen. And they kept every week, even though we thought they should have blown every team they played out. They kept it interesting, entertaining. Those guys were just great. And I'm so happy for them. I'm so happy for every single one of them, even though Ricardo Green plays on the evil 49ers, I'm still happy for him. you know, obviously Verse and Fisk on my Rams, like, love it. Love that they're playing well. Wish they could get more sacks so we could actually win some games.
Good on a bad team.
Yeah, good on a bad team. Keon, he's balling out for the Buffalo there. So, man, kudos to them. And it shows again how incredibly special and dynamic and talented that 2023 team was. It's just ridiculous that they were kept out of being able to show that against the rest of the
right.
nation.
And it really, I mean, honestly, it ties back into the recruiting talk that we just had, because you see what it takes to get where you want to be is to have guys who can go to the league and be competitive in that league. I mean,
that's right.
If you look back to what we just talked about the last episode, where I talked about how much better Jared Verse made Patrick Payton. That's why recruiting is so important. Now, I understand Jared Verse was a zero star that was found from Albany. I understand that, you know, Braden Fisk was taken from Western Michigan, but you either got to be able to eval great, or you got to be able to go out and get these dudes.
That's right.
And so right now we're just not seeing a whole lot of either year. But the last thing I want to get into is it is week 7 and there are some games worth watching this weekend. Obviously, at least on Saturday, hopefully all the recruits are not decommitting or whatever they're doing, so we can sit back and we can have a stress-free Saturday and watch some football. So while Florida State is not playing, we're going to touch on a couple of the games that are worth watching from around the country. Obviously, the one that I think most people have circled is number 1 Texas taking on Oklahoma, number 18 in the Red River rivalry. Texas, a 14.5 point favorite. I think they're probably, you know, I'm obviously going to take Texas to win this game. Oklahoma right now has a decent defense, but they're kind of struggling on offense.
Right.
Yeah, man, I like Texas in that one, but that's going to be a really good game. That's going to be definitely one you're going to want to tune into.
It's crazy because, you know, they're giving Texas 14.5. And I'm like, have you guys watched the Red River rivalry recently? Like,
yeah,
it's usually come down to like one score in the final moments the last several times. I can't remember the last time there's been a blowout. And
I think they blew them out last year. Oklahoma got beat like 50-0 or something last year. But I mean, 14.5, while you look it up, I mean, 14.5 points does feel a little bit slim. I mean, obviously you get the rivalry game, so you really never know. But and I want to say in that game, I think Dylan Gabriel did not play for Oklahoma in that game last year. Maybe go back to his first year, Venables' first year, 2 years ago. I want to say Texas absolutely blew their doors off. But yeah, man, I think that Texas is going to get the win there. I think they could probably even cover in this one, 14.5 points.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Oklahoma won last year 34-30.
But look at the year before that.
The year before that, 49. Yes, that's right. 49-0. Okay. That's
right. It was a slaughter the 2 years ago.
Okay. So that was like the first time in like a long time that it was a blow. Yeah. Since 2011. 2012. Yeah. 2012. Since 2012 is the first time that there was a blowout and Oklahoma blew Texas out.
It's really kind of like Florida State, Miami. Like that game is either going to be a blowout or it's going to be a one score game that comes down to the end. I mean, we've traded a few blowouts here or there, but it's usually always a good game. And this year, I mean, obviously Oklahoma still ranked number 18.
Yeah.
I think Texas is going to take this one.
Well, okay. So last year's case in point, Texas was ranked third in the game and Oklahoma was ranked 12th. And I think Texas got up early on that game and everybody's like, okay, this is going to be it. And then Oklahoma came back and won the game on a last second throw into the end zone. That's why I'm just saying, I'm like, okay, I get it. They've had a blowout before, but 14.5, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Oklahoma does struggle on offense. That's very for sure. And they just replaced their quarterback. Okay. Yeah, I was planning on taking Texas to win. To cover that 14.5, though,
yeah.
I don't know. I think I'll take
13.5.
Yeah.
You might feel good about it, but 14.5, that's tough.
Yeah, so I'll take Texas to win, but I'm going to take Oklahoma to cover.
Yeah, especially in a rivalry game. Yeah. Now, one that's going to be interesting here, one that could potentially be on upset watch, that is number 4 Penn State, 3.5-point favorite over USC, but they got to go all the way coast to coast. This is like,
that's right.
This is something that we saw with, you know, Miami went all the way to California last week, and now Miami struggled against Virginia Tech at home too, so maybe it's just Miami. But they struggled against Cal last week, going all the way over to California. So Penn State, I mean, first off, they're usually not great in big games. And you got to go all the way to USC. USC coming off a disappointing loss. So, I mean, we'll see, man. I don't know. Like, that's just a long way to go, man. Yeah. That's a long way. So only 3.5 points. I mean, number 4 team against an unranked USC, only 3.5-point favorite. That right there tells you to be on upset watch here.
Yes, yes. I would definitely agree with you to put Penn State on upset of watch. But there are a couple of things at factor. One, this is a nooner. So it's a nooner in California time. It's 12:30 California time. I used to go to USC games, as I told you guys before. Those noon games, those fans don't show up until maybe halftime, maybe.
Yeah.
Because USC is a party school. I'm telling you, man, that campus is going to be lit. It's going, you know, as us old folks say, it's going to be lit. So they're not getting to that stadium until maybe halftime. Maybe halftime. So that's one. Two, you're right. Penn State does struggle in big time games. But here's the key thing: is there a number in front of USC?
No.
Okay. Give me Penn State and give me Penn State to cover.
Oh, man, picking against your boys.
I know, I know.
The next one that we got our eye on here is Florida at number 8, Tennessee. Now, I think this is interesting because I think before Tennessee went and lost to Arkansas, which is an ugly loss, you probably would have had this something like there would have been a 2 in that number there,
yep,
as far as a favorite, but only a 14.5-point favorite at home against Florida.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, Florida actually has a little bit of momentum. I mean, they lost to Miami, which was a good team. But other than that, man, they've been actually looking okay. Now, they beat a bunch of bad teams. Like, their win is – their wins are Samford, and then
UCF.
UCF, who's not great, and Mississippi State, who's terrible. So they haven't really beat anybody good. So I'm obviously not going to pick Florida in this one. I'm going to pick Tennessee. I think Tennessee will cover. I think they'll bounce back. Man, I just think it's kind of like, wow, that 14.5 number is a little bit surprising in Knoxville.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, you're right. 14.5 in Knoxville, that crowd, that fan base, that atmosphere is wild. Yeah. And so I think what you saw is that Arkansas exposed a little bit about that offense. They were able to shut that offense down and keep it under what? I think they only scored 14 points in that game.
Yeah.
I believe.
And then remember, they only put up 25 against Oklahoma's defense.
Exactly. After putting up a bunch against NC State. And so I think if Florida can come out and play an inspired game on defense, that game will be close for a little bit. But man, I'm telling you what, if Tennessee is like a snowball, it really is. If they can get it going, especially in that atmosphere, it's a night game. So in that atmosphere, if they can get it going, they'll blow the doors off of Florida. But if they stronger around like they did with Arkansas and keep Florida in this game, and Florida can play somewhat of an inspired game on defense and just make just enough plays on offense, you might see yourself, you might flip over to that channel and it'd be a tight game going into the fourth quarter. But I got Tennessee. I'll take Tennessee. And I'm going to take them to cover just because it's a night game in Neyland Stadium. And I've been in that stadium at night. It is wild.
I'm going to take Tennessee and to cover too. But, man, how insane would it be if Florida did pull the upset? That would be – whew, that would
– I don't want that to happen.
Let's not talk about it because we don't want that to happen.
No.
The game of the week, of course, is going to be number 2 Ohio State finally playing a team with a pulse. only a 3-point favorite, but they have to go on the road against number 3 Oregon. This is an actual conference game now, so it's going to be interesting. You know, you remember a while back – this is back when old Crystal Ball was at Oregon. The last time they played, I believe Oregon did pull the upset there. I remember watching that game. They pulled the upset against Ohio State. Again, Ohio State looks like probably one of the best teams in the country right now. That's why they're ranked number 2, only giving 3 points in this one. But especially when you talk about an Oregon team that struggled against Idaho, that struggled against Boise State, and then finally kind of started to pick up some momentum and become the Oregon we thought they could be. Yeah. But Ohio State just hasn't played anybody yet. And that's really what you saw, like, with a couple of these teams early in the season, where you just beat up on a bunch of really bad teams. And then when you actually, like Ole Miss, again, beat up the best team they played all season was Wake Forest. Then they go and play Kentucky and they lose because they just ain't played nobody. Right. And so this is going to be interesting to see how Ohio State does when they play an actual comparable opponent. But I still think, even though it's at Oregon, I think Ohio State is the better team. I think because they played a bunch of teams, they're in rhythm. Oregon has struggled too much. Man, I'm going to take Ohio State. I'm going to take them to cover, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means. Yeah. I think Oregon has finally started to find their footing, but I still think Ohio State's a better team, and I think they win this one.
Yeah, this is good. This is a really good test, obviously, for Dan Lanning and the Ducks there, to see, you know, are they more closer to that team that really struggled early this season? You're like, what is going on? Or are they the team that we've actually seen of late as well? Obviously, Ohio State has this, like you said, their first opponent against somebody with an actual pulse, an actual opportunity. They're going on the road to Autzen. Autzen is wild. Believe it or not, as small as that stadium looks, it gets really, really, really loud. This will be Ohio State's first true test. I just think Ohio State has too much on Oregon right now for them to pull this out. So I'm going with Ohio State, and I'm going to take Ohio State to cover the 3. So the over and under right now is 54.5. So you're looking at either a 27-24 or a 30-27 type game.
Yeah, I would say too, if it was in the shoe, I would probably give them a double digit win easily.
Exactly.
But yeah, on the road, it's interesting because, again, like, every team that we've seen that's been in the top 10 has been tested,
exactly,
except for Ohio State. So now it's going to be interesting to see how they face with their first test. The other one we got our eye on here is number 9, Ole Miss, giving 3.5 to LSU, but it's in Death Valley at nighttime. Number 13, LSU. Ole Miss just got exposed by Kentucky. LSU is still just kind of, man, that's not really going the way they hoped it would. Man, being at LSU at night makes me really want to pick LSU in this one. But I think I might take Ole Miss here. This is really a toss-up game. I'm just not super confident in LSU, man. I mean, but Death Valley at night's hard to overcome. So I think this is really the definition of a pick 'em game. I mean, I really do.
Okay, that's listen. I have bought into your hype. Well, you told me.
I will say the one thing is, Ole Miss lost the first tough team, not tough, but Kentucky. They lost the first good team they played because of Kentucky's defense. Kentucky's defense is pretty good.
That's right.
We know LSU doesn't play no defense.
That's right. You're right. I was gonna get to that. But I bought into the hype. You said LSU at night, one of the best, if not the top 2 best environments in the country at nighttime. I believe it. And LSU has not scored less than 34 points in 4 of their 5 games. They only scored 20 against USC, but that was the opening game. We all know Brian Kelly sucks at opening games, right? But they scored 44 against Nichols. They scored 36 against South Carolina. They scored 34 against UCLA. And they scored 42 last weekend against South Alabama. Ole Miss All terrible teams. Ole Miss does not play great defense as well, as we saw against the Kentucky game. If you go back and watch that. I think this is going to be a slobber knocker, as the old Jim Ross of WWE used to say. I think it's going to be a barn burner. I think it's going to be up and down scoring because LSU does not play defense. And LSU right now, what'd you say was the spread?
Ole Miss 3.5 point.
Ole Miss 3.5.
Favorite.
Ole Miss is a 3.5 point favorite. Give me LSU to win and to cover. I think it'll be up and down, but I think LSU will get a last, will have the ball last, and they'll score a touchdown to win the game.
This is going to be a fun game to watch.
It's going
to
be a fun game.
If you can only pick one, that's going to be an offensive explosion. Now watch. Yes. It'll probably be like a 14-10 win or whatever. So that's probably the way it'll go, but it'll be fun to watch. And that's going to do it. But the other one, just as a Florida State fan, what you might want to keep your eye on here is Georgia Tech, a 4-point favorite at UNC. That is a noon game on the CW. Ooh, that's tough. Man, we got to get out of this conference.
But
that is something to probably keep your eye on, because we did play Georgia Tech already, and we still have to play UNC coming up. So that's going to be one to just keep your eye on, see how that one goes. maybe do some early scouting on UNC. I do think Georgia Tech's probably going to get the win there. But yeah, man, that's going to be one you're going to want to watch. Florida State's on a bye this week. Duke's on a bye this week. Miami's on a bye this week. So there's a couple of really good games to watch. I mean, there are, but that's just going to be one to kind of maybe keep your second TV on. UNC does.
Yeah, keep in mind, UNC has lost three straight. Remember, they got blown out by James Madison 70-50. Yeah. Can you believe I'm saying that? That's insane, UNC man. Got blown out by James Madison 70-50. They lost to Duke 21-20 when they had Duke beat. They had beat.
Yeah.
And then gave up 21 straight points and then score. And then they lost to Pitt 34-24. So I got Georgia Tech winning this game. It is on the road. I don't think that matters when you get beat by James Madison at home 70-50. Yeah, I got Georgia Tech winning this game.
Yeah, and so that's going to do it for this episode, guys. Make sure you tune back in next week when we have a football game to talk about. It's Florida State-Duke, Friday night primetime game in Durham. I think you guys are going to want to see this preview because I got some notes here. I got some things I've been cooking up. I think Florida State has a real opportunity to win this game, and the sneaky suspicion that I have here, and I don't want to spill the beans until we get to the preview, but let's just say I was on to something against Cal and it worked out. And so I'm on to something here that I think is going to be an opportunity to Florida State to win this game. So make sure you tune into that episode.
Can't wait.
It's going to be a fun one. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be at that game. So if you're planning on being at that game, make sure you find me and give me a gold Knowles. Drop in the comments if you're watching on YouTube, if you plan on going to that Duke game, if you're from the Carolinas. But yeah, it's we just wanted to come on and touch on some recruiting here. It's been an up and down week. Obviously, for Florida State, it's been a really up and down couple of years. But man, that's the recruiting roller coaster. That's the way it goes. Yeah. That's why we don't put a lot of time and heart into it. I know people love recruiting. Some people hate recruiting. Man, it's just really hard to hit your wagon to because it is such a wild ride. But yeah, I mean, so with that being said, we'll kind of close this one out here. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Make sure you check out Alumni Hall FSU. Like we said, you can turn the bye week into a bye week and go buy you some FSU gear with Coach Spear to save 10%. Drop a like and subscribe if you're on YouTube. A rate and review on the podcast would help us reach other people. We've had some really nice comments lately from some people that we really want to give a shout out. We want to say that we really appreciate the kind words from you guys and seeing those that share about the show on social media. We're still trying to grow. I know it's a bad season. It's a hard time for growth for us right now, but we really appreciate you guys for sticking with us through the season. We're going to stick with you guys. It's not what we want to talk about,
no.
But we're going to keep showing up and talking about it. So obviously, definitely appreciate you guys.
Again, unlike our team, we respond.
Exactly. We will show up on Saturday, even if they don't. But we do appreciate you guys. And like Michael said in the opening, for those of you in Florida who are going through some things, I know one of our listeners is, man, our prayers are with you guys and our thoughts as well. So we're just glad that you guys are safe. But yeah, that's going to be it for this one. We appreciate you guys tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one. We'll have that preview out for you early next week because it is a Friday game. So we're going to try to get it out a little bit early. So make sure you're on the lookout for that. So thanks for watching, guys. Until the next one, as always, go Noles.